This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Lorraine McAdam, artist, teacher, and former nurse who has been having encounters with the paranormal, ETs, and UFOs since she was a child. Lorraine, thank you for joining me, and welcome.
Hello. Hi.
Lorraine, you've been having encounters for a long time, so can we start back from the beginning and how did this all happen?
Yes. Well, I was only 12 years old, and it started then. What happened was my mum and dad broke up, and it kind of seemed to hit around puberty, really, because I was staying at my father's house, and I heard voices whispering behind me. And then all of a sudden, I heard this like buzzing noise, for want of a better way of describing it. And it sounded like a lot, to describe it for your audience, it sounded like when bees are buzzing. And I heard this buzzing noise, and then I became paralyzed, and then I would black out, and it would seem to move from the early hours in the night, and then I'd quickly go and I'd wake up and it would be morning. And I felt like I'd had some kind of blackout or missing time. And that was happening to me. It started happening also. I live with my mum, and it happened to me at my mum's house as well. And I believe that I was being taken when I look back on it now. But at the time, because I was brought up as a Catholic, I had no filter with which to judge what was happening to me, because there was nothing about alien abduction at that time. It was the early 70s, kind of mid-70s. And the only books about ETs or aliens available in the UK were Eric von Däniken's Ancient Aliens, you know, and God Was an Astronaut and that sort of thing, which didn't really go into any of that area. So what I decided it was demon oppression at the time. I thought I was being oppressed by demons because I was a Catholic and I'd been brought up as a Catholic. And I went to the priest at the church and I asked him if he'd pray for me to be delivered from it. And, you know, and in fact, at one point I thought, are they trying to possess me? But I think they were trying all along to tell me that they weren't what I was thinking they were, because there were several occasions where I actually saw the faces of the Greys, you know, but I didn't recognise that they were, in point of fact, the Greys, until much later on when I got hold of Whitley Strieber's book Communion, and I saw the face on the front and I realised what I'd been encountering. But that was years later, so I didn't know what I was encountering as a kid. I just didn't know what it was. And I was taken from 12 to 16, I would say at least once or twice a week this would happen. And I tried to tell my mum, and my mum just said I had a really vivid imagination and I was just imagining it. And one night, what they did, they paralysed me, but I didn't black out. And I could feel them writing something on the back of my nightwear. And it was almost like they were saying, we're real, we're not, what are you thinking? Because they let me out of the paralysis. And then I put the light on, rushed to the mirror, took my nightdress off, and I took my nightdress off to look what they'd done. And there was all this like black sort of symbols all over my nighties that they'd written. They looked like hieroglyphics, Egyptian hieroglyphics. And I've never forgotten that. But it was so scary, because what I did, I put my nightdress in the laundry, because I was a kid, you know, I didn't do my own laundry at the time. And my mum got really angry and made me wash it myself. And she said, she accused me of doing it myself because I was quite arty. She said, you've done this to get attention. And then another time what they did, they put me in the garden. They put me back in the garden. So I was locked out. And this really scared me more than anything, because I just thought, what on earth am I doing in the garden? It was summertime, thank God. So I had to knock on the door for my mum to let me back in the house. They didn't put me back in the bedroom, they put me back in the garden. And she accused me of climbing down the downpipe just so I could wake her up to let me in. So it was like really quite frightening for me.
Do you think it's possible that this divorce was so traumatic for you or so stressful that it fundamentally changed something within you energetically that opened you up to have the ability to have contact with the ETs?
I actually do believe that. Yeah, when I look back on it, that's not, you're not the first person to ask me that. Because what happened, my dad went off with another woman. And it really broke my heart because this other woman was very possessive of him, for want of a better way of putting it. And she wouldn't, from, I had, suddenly I had this loving father, you know, that really loved me and made a fuss of me, and I was his daughter. And then suddenly it was cut off. I couldn't see. It was like he'd suddenly died. If he died, I don't think it could have been any traumatic than it was. Because he went off with her and then he had a child with her. And although me and that child, she's my half-sister, we're really good friends now, actually, ironically. we get on really well, which is a good, there's a happy ending there. But at the time, her mum didn't want him to have anything to do with his former family. So I lost my father, really, for the good part of 8 years until, unfortunately for him, he did end up leaving this second wife as well, but that's another story. But the trauma of that was like a grief to me, and I couldn't stop crying. And even now, you know, when I think about it, it was very upsetting. So I went through all that grief, and it was horrible. I felt like he'd just rejected us because it was my brother as well. And maybe that did open something up. I'm wondering if it did, because my mum actually made the comment that, well, I stopped eating. I was hardly eating anything. You know, it really did affect me very badly. I've had counselling for it since, you know, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if that did open me up to something, yeah.
Well, did your mother ever get so tired of you talking about ETs that she threatened you?
She actually did, yeah. She, you know, you try and articulate this, what's happening to you, but she just put it down to my imagination. And she said to me that after the incident where I was in the garden, she threatened to take me to see a psychiatrist. And she never carried it out, but she did make me go to the doctor, and I ended up on some antidepressant therapy for a while. So she did take me to the local, what we call a GP here. I don't know whether you have GPs there in the States, but... Mm-hmm. And I was actually very embarrassed. I remember I couldn't tell the doctor about it because I just thought she'll put me in the, she'll certify me and chuck away the key if I tell her, try and tell her what's happening. So I thought, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to go along with what my mum's saying and pretend I'm having nightmares or something. But I remember thinking, I know I'm not having nightmares because I actually had a recall of them pulling me through the wall. And before I blacked out, I could see the cobwebs inside the house walls as I was being pulled through my bedroom wall. And I thought, and I thought, what on earth is happening to me? And to put it out of my mind, I put it down to it just being a nightmare or a bad dream, but I don't think it was, because I remember seeing spiders' webs inside the bricks as I went through the wall. And then I was I was pulled up to this cylindrical craft, and it was blue on the bottom, strong light, sort of deep blue light coming out of it.
What did it look like on the inside?
I don't know, because I think I must have blacked out. I was so terrified that I don't recall being actually aboard the craft. I just woke up after, you know, like I normally did, and I was back in my room. But sometimes they put me back on top of my bedding rather than in. They wouldn't bother to tuck you in. Mm-hmm. So I knew something weird had happened. Or they put your fingers on back to front. There were several occasions where my knife was put on the wrong way, put the wrong way around. And I knew I hadn't done that, obviously, because I wasn't like about three or something, you know. And it was very frightening, you know. And as I've said in my book, I didn't really realise what it was until 1993. I got hold of a copy of Communion, mm-hmm. and I have this picture of the old copy of it, and I saw that face. Mm-hmm. Can you see?
Yeah.
And I looked at it, and I was completely stunned and shocked, because I thought, I know that face. That face. I've seen that face in my room when I was a teenager, and it made me want to read it right away, obviously. And I read it through cover to cover. I couldn't put it down, and I immediately just resonated completely with Whitley Strieber. I thought, this is mirroring a lot of what he talks about. This is exactly what I went through, you know.
Have you ever contacted him about that?
I tried to, but he didn't reply. Maybe he was just really busy and inundated with other people, but I know he's very famous. But I did talk to, have you heard of Bud Hopkins?
Yes.
I wrote to Bud Hopkins in New York. I told him what happened to me. And he said, he wrote back and sympathized and said, try and get some therapy. And he said, I think you are a genuine bona fide experiencer, but you're a bit rare because you're British. I believe it's a bit rarer to have British abductees. I don't know.
I don't see why.
Neither do I either. But that's why I did wonder, you know, when you said about me being traumatized by mum and dad breaking up, I think maybe that was a factor that drew them. And you wonder why, don't you?
I feel like sometimes deep emotional stress, again, somehow fundamentally changes a person, which opens them up in some sort of way.
I would posit that that could be the case. Yeah, definitely, because I definitely did suffer. And it fundamentally changed my whole personality, because from being quite a happy-go-lucky type of child, really, I think it just changed me completely. I went to being very nervous, and you know, I had to wrestle with low self-esteem and all sorts of issues. So mm-hmm. I think it did change me.
Did you ever ask them, why me? Why did you choose me?
Yes, I did.
What did they say?
Yes, but I didn't see. They actually came back with the which I didn't really understand and still don't. They said, your soul family.
Soul family, yeah. That makes sense.
It didn't to me. I just thought, and then, well, it didn't to me at the time, should mm-hmm. I say, but it does now.
Right.
And I just thought, well, maybe I've chosen to incarnate here at this time. Mm-hmm. Maybe I chose this on some level. And that made sense eventually. Particularly what my encounters with what I call the Nordic ETs as well, which I have had several, they've said that we're soul family, you know, they've given me that message. And I just wonder if, you know, we kind of separate ET races out, don't we? And we say, well, there's the Greys, mm-hmm. there's the Nordics, there's reptilians, etc. But I just wonder if they're all in some kind of federation or some kind of organization that they have to adhere by similar rules and work together in some way, because that's what seems to be suggested to me from my own experiences, because I've actually seen them work together.
Do you think it's possible that in your previous life you were an ET?
Definitely. I have no doubt about that, because I've actually had very vivid dreams of not being on this planet, of living, for want of a better word, way of describing it, in a desert environment. And there were two suns in the sky. There was not one sun like we have here when I looked up. I think I've been a woman in more incarnations than a man. I felt I was a lady in that one. But also, I remembered being on a planet where the sun was nowhere near as strong as it is on Earth, but there was only one sun. But it was kind of like, if you will, our light is when it's dawn or dusk, if that makes sense. But it was daytime, and there were ice fields on this planet that I flew over.
Wow.
Big ice fields, and it was very flat. There weren't many mountains, and I've had dreams of that as well. And my husband looked Nordic. That I dreamt about. So, you know, I just wonder if, I mean, the messages I've had as well, seemed to confirm that to me, that and it was almost like there have been times of distress in my life when they seem to come close to me when I'm distressed.
It makes sense to me that if you're a family member and you're in distress, they want to help you.
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Which is why I think, I hope you understand what I mean when I say I think I've chosen to incarnate here, mm-hmm. because we are going through a sea change at the moment, I believe, on Earth, where we're becoming more and more aware that we're not alone in the universe, that there are other races around us. And I believe within the next 100-odd years, we're going to have to come face to face with ET, a lot of us, not just one or two of us. And maybe my coming is part of preparing people, because certainly I feel as if I've had my consciousness raised through my lifetime as a result of coming to know what happened to me. And I have this kind of sense now of who I am and what my purpose is. But I didn't have as a kid. Obviously, it was very puzzling and frightening as a kid, but I have that now. And I just feel like we're here to be witnesses, you know, and that's why we've been shown craft and things like that. And I'm sure, I know I'm not the only one. I know there's thousands of us, you know, that have experienced these things. And I believe that.
In your book, Phantoms in the Night or ETs, you write about meeting an ET here on the planet named Carola, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize she was an ET at the time, but I firmly believe looking back that she was, because what happened was I was extremely ill. I had severe food poisoning in 1986, and I'd gone out as a nurse and taking some patients. I'd gone with another nurse to Cyprus. And the first night I ate a salad, nobody told me not to eat salad abroad, and I ended up with food poisoning and I nearly died. And what happened was I was admitted to hospital and I was lying in this bed and there was another bed next to mine. Now, this is a strange thing. And in the bed next to mine, as I came to in my bed, because I've been taken in an ambulance, there was a blonde man and there were two blonde women and two blonde men visiting him. And I just assumed at the time that he was a Swedish, somebody native to Sweden or something, you know, didn't think anything of it. And just looked over and kind of acknowledged them. And then I needed, this is a funny bit, I really needed desperately to go to the loo. And I asked one of the women, I indicated, could you just help me into a wheelchair just to get to the loo? Because for some reason I couldn't find my buzzer. You're usually given a buzzer and the nurse tells you, there's your buzzer if you need me. But I wasn't, none of that had happened. So this, one of these blonde women, I don't know who she was, but there is a, I'm going to post a mock-up of her face as well on my page, on my book page, if people want to look on Facebook that I was telling you about. Anyway, she took me to the loo and then put me back in bed. And then later, I realised I kind of fell asleep, you know, after she put me back in bed. And later on, it was dark and the nurse woke me up to put a saline drip into my hand that had come out, you know, because they put you on intravenous saline when you've got food poisoning. And I looked at the bed next to mine and it was neatly made up and there was nobody in it. After seeing this man in bed and these four, and this lady took me to the loo, etc. And I said, where's that man gone from that bed? To the nurse, to the Cypriot nurse, and the nurse said, there's no man been in that bed. She said, you've been on your own all the time in this room. There's just you here in this, on this ward. So that was the first weird thing that happened. So I described this girl in my book and I did a drawing of her. And if you want to go over to my page, you can see she looks very Nordic, typically Nordic ET, blue eyes, blonde hair. But then a few days later, I was wanting to go to the hospital chapel because I was a Christian and I was feeling very low, you know, because I was so ill in a foreign country. And this lady called, she said, I'm Nurse Carola. That's how she described herself. She came to me and she said, I'll take you to the chapel if you like. She said, come on, we'll put you in a wheelchair and we'll take you down to the little hospital chapel. Now, this is a Catholic country, this there in mind, you know, so... She took me across the cactus garden physically put me in a wheelchair, took me out of the French doors, and went down to what appeared to be a chapel. But the strange thing about this chapel was that it was pitch black inside, and I didn't feel any, that this was strange at the time, and I should have done, shouldn't I, really? So I wonder if she was controlling the whole situation when I look back on it. And she puts me in a pew, and she said, come and talk to our elder, because she said, you know, it might help you to feel better. And it was only after that I thought, what, wait a minute, elder? Why not priest or father? We're in a Catholic country here. Why elder? Anyway, this elder said to me, and I don't remember seeing his face. I couldn't see his face, which was also weird. And he seemed to just materialize right next to me, which was also weird. But none of his face me at the time. That's a strange thing. And he said to me, he said, why did you want to come to church? And I said, because I want to feel God's presence, you know, and just take comfort in that. And he said, you don't need to come to church to find God. God is everywhere and he's all around us. And he said, and one day you'll understand this better. And I feel now I do understand that. But when I look back on it now, I realise that I think I was taken aboard a craft disguised as a chapel, and that I met, I believe, a grey elder. And he had a very deep, resonant voice. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I understand now that God is all around us and through everything, because he's the source of everything, isn't he? You know, and I see that better now than I did at the time when I kind of, you know, just narrowed my beliefs down to Christianity. My beliefs have expanded much more now, if that makes sense. And he kind of, I'll never forget the words he said to me. He said, one day you'll understand this better. And then she took me back. And the funny thing is, this is where it gets weird. She put me into bed, said goodbye. And I said, can I have your address? So this is a flesh and blood person, or so it appeared. I said, are you coming on shift tomorrow? She nodded at me. And then I waited till the next day. And then I asked the nurse that came on, who was a male nurse, where's Carola? I want to get her address. She said she'd give me her address. What? Who's Nurse Carola? There's no Nurse Carola on this ward. We don't have a Nurse Carola on this ward. And at that point, I actually began to wonder, am I going completely loopy? You know, so I have since recalled it. I recalled it in my book. And then that photograph, well, it looks like a photograph that you're looking at, was what my friend Mark took for me from my drawing of her. He produced that. And that's exactly how she looked, what you see on my book page.
And I just want to mention that what Lorraine is referencing is that she showed me an AI picture of what Nurse Carola looked like. And she looks kind of like a human ET hybrid. And to me, she looks mostly human, but just with big eyes.
Yeah, she had these huge brown eyes. And at first, when he did that for me, he had her with blue eyes. And I had to correct him. And I said, please, can you give her brown? She had very brown eyes, but they were kind of an amber brown. And he's got her exactly, you know, wow. Beautiful brown. Yeah.
And I felt like there's something familiar about her.
Yeah, that's interesting that you think that. Have you had experiences yourself, I wonder?
Not that I can remember. If I have, I don't know.
Okay.
If we move forward in time, you had a dream about a ship in your garden or something, and then you physically saw the ET later.
I did. I mean, I've not just encountered the Greys, I've also encountered what are referred to as the Nordic ETs. And we call them that, not because of literally Nordic, that the blonde and blue-eyed people, just to let people know if they weren't sure. But what happened was, I had a very vivid dream that like a sort of creamy coloured tic-tac shaped craft was in my garden, and it opened up like a hatch in the middle, and this blonde, blue-eyed, very tall guy got out and shook hands with me. Now, I'm very gifted in that I have a good memory for faces. I never forget faces. My husband remarks on it, how I remember faces, especially if somebody's in, say, one thing on television and then they're in a totally different thing. I'll spot an actor a mile off in a different thing, the same actor. But he remarks on it. So I believe I have a good memory for faces. And this man shook hands with me. And I thought, what on earth was that all about when I woke up? And I thought nothing of it. And then a few days later, we took the children to the library. They were only little then. This was 2008. And we were coming back from the library, and on the kind of in the field on the left-hand side of us, as we were coming back from the library, just down from our house, there were these strange crop formations that appeared in the field. And my husband pointed them out, which was unusual for him because he's been very cynical about all this, and he's one of those people who's seen is believing. And he pointed out that all these shapes were in this field, and they were like in the shape of the swastika and like letter H. And he literally stopped the car and went in the field, and he was amazed because he said, those have definitely had to come from something that's come from the air, because I can only see my footprints going in and my footprints coming out. So we stopped, looked at that for a while, then thought nothing of it. And then I wish we'd taken photographs in retrospect, actually, of that. And then we came back, and on our drive, on our actual house drive, was parked a black Land Rover. And in this Land Rover were sat two blonde people. One was a lady. She looked very pretty, very beautiful, long blonde hair, a bit wavy at the bottom. And next to her was sat a man with short blonde hair. And when I looked at him, I didn't tell my husband this because I didn't even tell him about the dream. But when I looked at him, I immediately recognized him as the man from my dream. And I thought, what the heck is going on? And when our eyes met and we caught them on the drive, maybe we weren't meant to, I don't know. He looked as shocked as I was. And then as soon as he saw me, they drove off. And I thought, what on earth was that all about? And then about a month later, I had some sightings of craft over that same field. Do you want me to talk about that? Or
sure.
Do you want me to talk?
Sure.
Yeah. So how they started it was in August, and it was shortly after I'd had this encounter with him, which makes me wonder if this was the Nordics initiating this. And I kind of went to my window because I couldn't sleep. It was a very hot summer, and I had the window open, and it was just so stuffy. And I woke up and I saw these white lights whizzing apart and coming back together to make one big white light, and then whizzing apart again and coming back together. There were sort of zigzagging white lights at the bottom of this field. And I thought, what on earth is that? And I tried to rationalize it. And I thought, is it children, you know, messing about with torches? But I thought, well, why would children be in a field messing about with torches at 3 a.m. in the morning? Doesn't make sense, you know. So I dismissed that idea. And I just thought, what on earth is that? And I told my husband about it. And he sort of said, well, why don't you go out in your car and investigate it further? And I was a bit scared, but I thought, yeah, I might just do that if I see them again. Anyway, shortly after I'd seen these, I also saw over that same field a huge cylindrical craft with green and orange lights around the outside of it, which also my friend that does the AI mock-ups has done a mock-up of this, which I'm going to post on my book page on Facebook shortly, because he's only just done it. But what it did, it turned on its side like a wheel, stood on its side, and then righted itself and then hovered back over the field. And it was almost like, to me, it was saying, look what we can do. It was almost like it was showing off the capability of this craft was amazing, far beyond our physics, what anything but we can do. And then suddenly it just disappeared, completely just blinked out. And I thought, and it made me question, have I just seen this? Or was I, you know, was I hallucinating it? Have I just seen this? But I was convinced I'd definitely seen something. And then my mum came up during that time, and she didn't tell me, but she said she saw a red UFO, what appeared to be a glowing red UFO, right over one of the pylons in that same field. And then a few nights later, the zigzagging white lights came back again, and I thought, right, I'm going to go and investigate this. So I get some medical Fiat. I drove to the place where it were, all the, you know, to the side of the field. And at the side of the field was parked on the ground a white, sort of pearlescent, lit up from inside, egg-shaped craft, which my friend's also done a mock-up of. And at either side of this craft, there were, I think they were male, and they seemed to be waiting for me almost. And there was one on either side of it, and they were dressed in black, tight-fitting, what looked like diver's suits to me. But they were definitely Nordic looking, but I was so terrified of this, And the first thought that came into my mind was, I'm a mother of two young children. What if they take me and don't bring me back? And I drove off. And what I did next was completely illogical. It was almost like they still had control, because to come back to our village, if you go down the B6263, you would have to come right back around the roundabout and come back on yourself. But I didn't do that. I took the first exit, which led onto the M6, heading south. And why the heck I would do that, I have no idea. It was almost like maybe I was just in such a state. And I told the journalist this, and he knew Southwark Services because he's a local. You know, I talked about this recently in a newspaper article that I've just had published. And I pulled into Southwark Services. I'm waiting there on the tarmac. As I got out of my car and I was literally shaking, was a plain white lorry. And driving this plain white lorry was a blonde blue-eyed guy, very tall, very strong looking, and he didn't talk to me. And I said to him, I just assumed in my head that he was a lorry driver, and I said to him, can you take me back over the bridge to help me get turned around to go back north towards Scotland, because I'm the wrong way around. And at the time I'd hardly gone on the motorway. I have since been on the motorway a lot, but at the time I wasn't a very confident driver. I hadn't been on the motorway very much at all driving. And I thought in my mind, maybe I could get back across the bridge or something. But of course, you cannot turn around at Southwark Services. You would have to go to the next junction, which is known as Wigton. You can look that up on your Google Earth if you like, if you want to after. You would have to go there.
Let me stop you for 1 second and ask you this real quick. What's a lorry?
It is a truck. I think you call them trucks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're, you know, the transport goods and things. Mm-hmm. So it would be a white truck, I think you would call it. Right. The strange thing about this truck was that the guy said to me, just follow me. And I trusted him implicitly, which is weird in and of itself. But the funny thing about this truck was that I was in a small car, a Fiat, a little Fiat. You should have been able to see the tyres and the backlights of a lorry, shouldn't you? Do you agree? There were no lights, yes. There were no tyres. All I saw in front of me all the time that he seemed to be leading me was a white wall. That's all I saw. And I felt myself, come back onto the motorway. And in my head, I think they were planting the thought, you're just following me. But really, I think I'd been taken aboard some kind of craft, because not only did he have me heading back north, you know, I was put back the right way. But the thing is, when I went back to Southwark Station to investigate, there's no way you can turn around there. There's no bridge. There's no nothing. And the journalist acknowledges that I talked to recently. He said, there's no way you can turn around there. So how on earth did I get turned around? I did not go to Wigton.
Was there any missing time that night?
There was an hour of missing time. My husband was frantic when I got back. He said, where the hell have you been? He said, I thought you'd been abducted or something, because I told him, you know, he knew my history. Although I don't think he quite fully believed it until that happened. And I told him I'd gone out to investigate the lights and this is what had happened to me. And he was frantic. He said, I thought they'd actually taken you and not brought you back or something. And I thought, yeah, you are taking me seriously, really, aren't you? Even though you don't want to admit it, you know. I had an hour of missing time. That to get back from there should only take 10 minutes. It took me an hour. So where was I?
When was the most recent contact that you've had?
The most recent was when I was in the Lake District, and we went up a mountain recently. They're just ongoing, quite frankly. And there only seems to be me sometimes that will see these Nordic ETs, and no one else in my family will see them. And it's almost like they play tricks on purpose sometimes to prove to me that that I'm the one seeing them and that other people aren't. Because what happened was, we've been up this huge mountain. We do the Wainwright, what they call the Wainwrights. And we're coming down, and my son was following me. My eldest son, he's 22 now. He was following me, and a tall man. I pick up on their energy as well. I feel like we communicate telepathically. So as he was coming up the hill, he just looked ordinary, like an ordinary hiker. But I just knew right away there was something different about his energy. And he looked at me and he had this lovely, warm, loving smile. And he smiled at me and then carried on. And I thought, oh, what a nice guy. Didn't think a lot of it. And then when we got to the bottom, my son was behind me following me. I said, did you see that guy? Did he say hello to you? He said, what guy, Mum? What are you talking about? There was nobody there. I was following you all the time. There's nobody there. And this has happened so many times to me. But it happened a lot during lockdown, where I was given the message, we're going to protect you through this very difficult time that, you know, that you're going through on Earth at the moment. And I had I was woken up several times where I saw a Nordic guy in my room. Now, this is a dramatic bit as well, was that I questioned whether I was seeing things and that sort of thing. But I actually took a photograph and pointed my camera, my phone camera, into my dark bedroom. I thought, I'm going to get a photo of you. If you're really here, I'm going to get you. And I think they will only permit photographs if they want you, you know, if they want to. And I was privileged to get a picture of him, which I can send you if you like.
Maybe you can post that as well on your Facebook page so everybody can see it.
Yeah,
that would be great.
I will do. And you can definitely see there's a figure there in the dark. He was very tall. He stood by my dressing table mirror. He was about 6'7" at least. And you can see his feature. Now, I've since sent this to a few friends. I've sent it to my friend Jason Thornton, who runs the Most Authentic Abductees group on Facebook. He's the leader of that. And I sent him that. And right away he said, that's a Nordic ET. I can see his face. Mm. You can see his face more than anything. His body, he's wearing some kind of, for want of a better way of describing it, it looks like a monk-like garb with a hood. And Jason picked up, he said, I think this is an elder. This is somebody really wise.
Do you think it's possible that the ETs ever harvested some of your eggs and you have hybrid children?
I think it is definitely possible. I feel as if an encounter I had in 2008 with a blonde girl, I feel like she was saying, almost like we resonated on a level where she was saying, you're my mum almost. And she had sort of fine blonde hair, very blue eyes. And she was dressed in kind of blue mechanics, or well, it looked like mechanics overalls. And a friend that was with her was dressed identically. And I encountered them in a coffee shop of all the places. And it was like, she was, I know this sounds really naughty maybe, but it was like she was saying, I'm yours, I'm just showing myself to you to let you know that, you know, I'm actually part of you. And I've since seen her as well, the same girl, and I know this sounds more recently, we do climb the mountains a lot around here, and she was at the top of one of the mountains with, I think she was showing me a boyfriend or something. And this sounds really funny, but I got to the top and I thought, I know your face. I know that girl. And she looked at me, smiled, and then I thought nothing of it. I thought, am I imagining all this? And I was just going down the mountain and we heard this huge roaring noise over us. And they did not come down, and there was only one path down. And I heard this huge roaring noise and I thought, they've gone, that's them, they've gone back into a craft or something. And I know that's a huge leap to make, but they would have had to come down the same path as me, and they didn't.
Now, I know you live in the north of England, and historically there have been a lot of Vikings there.
Yes, that's right.
Is it possible that these Nordics are just people of Viking descent, or do they look even different than humans?
Well, you could say that, but she had huge eyes as well. You know, where Carol has huge eyes. Well, this girl had huge blue eyes, and a boyfriend that was with her at the time, he had huge brown eyes. And I thought he looks like, he almost looked Asiatic, or that he was half, part Asian. And I just felt the energy, because I'm slightly psychic, I think their energy is different than ours. Yes, there are a lot of blonde, blue-eyed people here, but the difference is, when you see a Nordic, that their skin is perfect, they've no blemishes or wrinkles, and they are very good looking as well, usually. they're very handsome or very beautiful if it's a girl. And that's always been the case. I just know there's a difference on a fundamental, even a spiritual, vibrational level. And I've talked about this with other people. The vibration is much higher than ours. They're much more spiritual, much more, dare I say, nearer to God, or whatever you want to call God, a source. I don't know. But I just feel that they are, the vibration is so much higher than ours, you know, and you're picking, I think that's what I'm picking up on.
Would you say that they are generally taller than the rest of us?
Very tall, usually, yeah. Especially the men. I mean, the one that I caught, I mean, it's in the dark, but you could still see him, even though it's dark. It was at least 6'7", maybe even 7 feet tall. The ones that I saw at the side of the aircraft, the egg-shaped craft, came halfway up that craft, and that craft would be as tall as two cars on top of each other, if that gives you an idea. So they were at least 7 feet tall. You know, I mean, they weren't like normal human. I don't know, that the men are very strong looking. They look stronger than human men, what I've seen of them. Kind of more wiry in the build. I don't know what I've witnessed anyway. You know, they seem to be taller and stronger.
Well, it appears that most of your contact is with these Nordics. So do you think it's potentially that's your family and you were a Nordic or are on the other side?
It's possible. I think very possible. I believe in reincarnation. And if you believe in that, I believe you make a contract before you come to Earth. And I have recalls of being a blonde, blue-eyed lady in another life, because I looked in the mirror and saw that I was blonde and blue-eyed. I wasn't dark like I am in this life. In this life, my mum is part Italian, so I take after my mum in colouring. But my dad, conversely, is blonde and blue-eyed. My father, who was from Scottish origins, is blonde and blue-eyed. What I've thought about is it could be DNA as well that I'm seeing, because I might have been one of my own ancestors, is what I'm speculating here, because there are records of the Tuatha-De-Dananann, they called them, or the Anunnaki, coming to Earth after the great floods happened on Earth. There are legends and records, if you look in ancient alien theory and that sort of thing, throughout all of the Earth, of tribes talking about this huge calamity that happened to the Earth for some reason or other. We have Noah's Ark in our recall, you know, which is in Genesis in the Bible. And we learned that these people came in groups, and that they were blonde and blue-eyed people. There are legends of them in Ireland. They were called the Moon-Eyed People. And the reason for that was that they couldn't stand our sun. Their eyes just couldn't cope with our sun. So they used to go and hunt at night, and they were called the Moon-Eyed People for that reason, because they couldn't actually come out in our daylight. And interestingly, when I had this dream of being a Nordic lady, the sun on that planet was a lot weaker than Earth's sun. And it was kind of like our sun is at dawn or at dusk. It was like our twilight. So it's a weaker sun. And I thought that was interesting, given that I also, they talk about this Tuatha-De-Dananann that couldn't actually cope with our daylight. And often if you see Nordic ETs in disguise, they often would wear sunglasses, which I know is a very practical thing to observe, but they'll always have sunglasses on. So that is something I've observed also.
Have you had any long-term effects from being an abductee?
Yes, I have. My husband and me, we have a standing joke that I pop all the light bulbs in the house, because especially if I'm very upset, or if I'm either really happy or really upset, and my husband's witnessed this, they just go pop, 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 pop above my head. And these are the kitchen lights. And my husband's witnessed this happen, and he's actually witnessed me put a street light off on one occasion, it came back on again, we were having a row outside, me and my husband, and suddenly the street light just went off and came back on again above my head. But also, no wristwatch has ever survived on my wrist. They all break, or I drain phones very quickly. They don't last as long as they should with me, even a brand new phone. And I just feel like I'm always setting alarms off. I think I mentioned that in my book, that I set security alarms off, and yet there's nothing on me. And particularly when I'm going through airport security, I've been stopped many a time. There was one particular occasion was so embarrassing, where I thought she was going to threaten me with the, you know, the probing that they do if they think you're carrying drugs or something. I was coming into through security, and she kept waving the finger over my knee. And every time she waved it over my knee, it beeps. And she said, "Have you had a knee operation?" I said, "No." I'd taken all my jewellery off, I'd removed everything metal, and still it beeped. And she said, "Are you sure you've not had a knee operation?" She just couldn't get her head around this at all. I said, "No, I've not had any parts replaced that I know of." And in the end, she just let me through and gave me a funny look and just dismissed it as one of those oddities that you get, you know. But so I do that. And forceps won't work for me, automatic forceps. I don't know why, you know, in the loos, they just won't work for me.
Is it possible you have an alien implant in your body?
I think it's very possible, yeah, given my history. I've never had it investigated, but I would bet a lot of money that probably they would find something, especially my knee, because when we were in New York recently, actually, every single shop we went in, I triggered the alarms, and I actually got chased by a security guard. And I said, "Look, I've nothing. There's nothing." I said, "Believe me or not," I said, "this happens to me a lot." And he looked at me like I was just mad. This guard, he just looked at me as if I was a nutcase. And me and my husband would just laugh. My husband's used to it now. It's a standing joke that I'm going to set an alarm off. So, you know, it just...
Does your husband ever joke with you that you're his ET?
Yes, he does. He whistles the theme music to the Twilight Zone. I think he copes with it with humour, in other words, you know. So he's kind of, yeah. He kind of... He's more open-minded about it than he used to be. I've actually been taken while he's been asleep next to me. You know, they can turn people off, and they've done it with him. And I'd be screaming in my head, and they'd take me anyway. And I would just be paralysed and not even able to reach over to him or anything. And I told him, and at first, when we got married, he didn't believe me. But I think he does believe me more now. As time's gone by. Yeah.
That's great. Well, again, your book is called Phantoms in the Night, or ETs. And if people are interested in it, where can they learn more about it?
Well, they can go to my book page on Facebook. I will send you the link as soon as I come off the podcast now. So you can post that in there if you like. Also, they can go to Amazon, USA or UK, to buy my book. It's Lorraine McAdam. If you just put that into the search engine of Amazon, it'll bring my book up. It's also available at Six Books Inc., which is the website for my publisher. So Collective Books Inc. I can send you all the links for that if you like.
Sure.
But I can send you my Facebook link, which incidentally I'm going to post all those newly done AI photographs of the craft I witnessed and the Nordics I encountered whilst I was in hospital, and also other ETs I've encountered. So that if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see those for yourself if you want to go and investigate that.
Well, after watching this podcast, people may want to ask you questions. Are you open to that?
Yes, I am. I mean, at the back of my book, there is my email. If you get a copy of my book, my email's there at the back if you want to ask me questions. But also, if you go and follow me on my Facebook, on my book page, you can post a message there by all means, and I'm quite open to answering questions of any sort. That's fine. Yeah.
Do you feel like the ETs have some sort of message for humanity?
I do. And I think that message is, and I find this incredible, that people, we've had a 50-year embargo, basically, haven't we, on the truth, I think. Have you heard of David Grush? He's recently coming out to bring this out, that we've been hiding ET craft and downed sources and things. Also, you know, you had the naval pilots coming out and talking about the Tic Tac craft and how incredibly swiftly they moved, etc., and that this couldn't possibly be anything of ours. I believe this is all starting to come out, and there's a kind of, if you will, kind of call it soft disclosure going on. And I think the message is that they're trying to say, basically, we're not alone in the universe. That's maybe why people like me have been contacted. There's thousands of us, really. I believe that it's very important to kind of talk about your experiences, not to hide them, because I hid mine for nearly half a century. And I really regret that now. I wish I'd come out sooner and told my story. But I think it's very sad that currently on Earth, if you talk about any of this, you are 9 times out of 10, you're ridiculed. Thank God things are changing, because when I went recently to the newspaper, I found them far more open-minded. They didn't mock me when they published the article. I wasn't mocked. And I think there is a sea change going on as we speak, where people are being taken more seriously when they talk about these things happening to them. I don't know whether you agree with me on that, but I think there needs to be an end to the embargo on the truth. If people know, they should come out and say what's happened to them. I know there's some brave whistleblowers coming out as we speak from within the intelligence services and the military. I would encourage them to carry on doing that. I think that there is a sea change happening as we speak, definitely, and that's why people are coming out more and more about this. And I don't think you can stay hidden in an age where you have an internet and the World Wide Web. I think it was bound to come out. I really do. I think Whitley Strieber led the way, you know, he with his book Communion. But I think more and more people are coming out, and we're in a sea change. We're going through a change on Earth now, where ET is going to become visible, where we just can't deny it anymore. And I think within 100 years, it'll just be that we'll be in contact with them, and it'll just be thought of as normal. It'll not be thought of something incredible, as something incredible or out of the ordinary. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. Lorraine, thank you for sharing their message.
Thank you.
Thank you for being my guest.
You're welcome, and I'll send you those links as soon as I come off here. Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.